Did you guys see that video of, I don't know, there was at least several different videos floating around this week of old people assaulting young people who were like trying to do like a Gaza protest, you know what I mean? Like a pro-Palestine.
Yeah, we had like the Geezers Brigade. The Geezers Gestapo.
You experienced that firsthand, didn't you, Terrence?
Yeah, I did. I have experienced it.
You got roughhoused by old motherfucking Terrence?
I don't, depends. Which exact moment are you talking about, Tom? I feel like this is happening.
No, the guy
times.
That ran into the protest after the UK game, like you were talking about on the Patreon. How old was that guy?
That guy was probably in his 60s. He was definitely on the line between Gen X and Boomer.
All right, but the people that we're talking about in these videos are hoary haired, silver haired, yes. Not silver foxes. They're more like ghouls. They're more like decrepit, like Middle Earth creatures.
The one
they got the shakes, you know.
The one that killed. There was two that fucking killed me. One was at a Jill Stein event, which really tells you everything you need to know about that fucking absolute black hole of hopelessness. Fucking Jill Stein and Green Party in general. I don't know. I was at the Palestine thing at the very end. They were like, write your representatives, vote third party. And I was like, dude, it's done, guys.
I would just say real quick that, like, you know, sometimes, like, you know, I make the mistake of going online and, you know, just be like, oh, I'm not going to fucking vote. Da, da, da. I had made a post like that recently and somebody's like, oh, third party. And I just want to let listeners know you can do whatever you want. But I have checked out. I'm just gonna let you know that it doesn't matter if it's a fucking. It doesn't matter what third party. It's not gonna happen, y'all.
It don't matter if you're black or white. We're all
smoking crack tonight. You don't know. We're not.
There was like an Ezra Klein tweet this week where he was like commenting on the Joe Biden story in the New Yorker, where he was like, I don't know. It seems like the Biden campaign is really stubborn. Like, I don't know. Like, they're really not changing course, are they? It's like, okay. I don't know how to like put this in as plain a way as possible, but you know, like when your grandfather, like your 85-year-old grandfather, like insists on fucking like shearing the bushes out in front of the house, doing some chore that he has no right or ability
to
do.
Pulling the weeds or something. Yes. Like, no, actually, that would be better. He'd be like, yo, I need to chop down some firewood. And it's like, first of all, the farthest tree is like 8 miles away, Grandpa. Secondly, you're like 95 years old. Like,
yeah, you're 104.
That's the logic at operation here. Like, we live under the whims of a mad king. We cannot affect it. There is no way to affect it.
I would suggest, if for those that are still holding out hope, go listen to the one we did about the French king and what ended up happening there. When you do try to intervene, here's what happens.
Yeah. It's, well, but okay, so the two videos that I saw, one was at a Jill Stein event that, you know, these young people were trying to do.
So Jill Stein, not Joe Biden.
No, Jill Stein, which is funny because like at the pro-Palestine march I was at on Saturday, like the Jill Stein contingent was very present and they were handing out flyers.
Jill Stein contingent?
Yeah, she's coming to Lexington, I guess, maybe like today, actually. Sometime this week. She may have already come. I don't know. Okay. But it's like, regardless, whatever. That's just a fucking complete lost cause. A completely, like, hopeless. You might as well, like, take all the money in your bank account and then just put it on your front yard and just, like, piss on it and pour gasoline on it.
You might as well take a submersible to the Titanic. And also, yo, I want to just say something, too, because, I mean, this is, like, this is probably where you were going, and this is, you know, this is a trite comment. And but I've been more fascinated recently with the sort of
signifiers that seem to explode out of the contradictions. I just mentioned the submersible. That was such a visceral, sort of cathartic image, right? An expression, right? Joe Biden sitting at a cake with a candle with 84 candles conflagrating into a flame, into an inferno, right? I mean, all of these things, right, that are just so emblematic of this kind of decadent era that we live in. And just for these old ass liberals, these white liberals, to be shouting down young people is just, I mean, I can't think of anything that was just more expressive of the moment that we're in, you know.
You know what's funny about that, though, like the rallying cry to vote for third party, like honestly, the uncommitted movement is yielding more dividends. Like voting for somebody that's not there is actually proving more fruitful than voting for some of these third-party outfits. Like, there's more confidence in nobody rather than somebody in some instances.
There's more confidence in the amorphous silhouette of on the character creation screen, the randomizer.
Right. You know what I mean?
Like, the idea of a president is more comforting to people than any of the realities that exist.
These
right
third-party
now
options, yeah.
Or third-party options, exactly.
Yeah. Well, and just to, like, back up what I'm saying with, like, a theoretical justification, with the exception of about 4 years, 2016 to 2020, even then I think that, like, you can even make an argument that, like, Bernie's campaigns even probably served in a way the same function, but it was way more mystified. But, like, I genuinely think that in election years politics tend to become way more reactionary. Like, the narrow, like, the horizons for what's possible become extremely, like, much more narrowed. I mean, again, maybe that seems farcical to say that it was the case with Bernie. I don't think that was the case in the immediate sense, obviously, because he was calling for things that were, like, you know, Medicare for all, universal healthcare programs, yeah, and that kind of stuff. But you could make the argument that in the structural sense, he did serve the purpose of bringing people back into the fold of a ultimately reactionary thing.
Yeah, it's like the Democratic Party is the graveyard of social movements, right?
Yeah, you know? I mean, it's like I'm, you know, woke up to the news yesterday that, like, Kathy Hochul had, like, sent in National Guard troops into the fucking subway.
She turned to Judge Dredd.
Oh my God,
Judge Judy Dredd.
I saw that. What was the deal with that?
Like, yeah, what happened out?
So what
this is
happened?
The same woman that had made some sort of loose comments about, like, invading Canada, or like Canada invading Buffalo or something.
Having a new Canada as a metaphor,
but, like,
for Israel.
Comparing that to Israel Palestine.
Yeah, she said that if, like, Canadians came across and murdered 1,300 people in Buffalo, first of all, that's not true. I've been to Buffalo. The structural forces being Buffalo is the Appalachia of New York. So, like, they would absolutely write off 1,300 deaths in Buffalo. They'd be like,
they just fell off a mountain or some shit like that.
They wouldn't bat an eye at that.
Yeah,
try eating by some cougars.
They wouldn't give a shit.
Yeah, the Donner Party shit. Yeah. 1,300 strong.
But they, yeah, she said that we would have to, like, nuke Buffalo, basically. Or, I mean, sorry, nuke Canada.
Yeah, they said Canada would pay a grave price if they hurt the hair on any Buffaloan. Buffaloite.
Buffalo.
I don't know what he calls them for Buffalo.
But, like, what she said was, so, like, the whole point of this is that it's become, like, a crisis thing in the same way that, like, a flood is a crisis and they have to send in the National Guard. Crime has become a crisis now. So now they send in the National Guard to the subways and they can check your suitcases and shit. Like, they search your bags. And apparently this is not a violation of the Fourth Amendment.
As a native New Yorker, they've been doing this, like, I'm just curious as to why there's fanfare about it now. Because after 9/11, for as long as I can remember, I mean, you were subject to having your bag searched, like they would have the table there and, you know. But now it seems to be, maybe the fanfare is because, or the outrage, I guess I should say, is because it seems to be mandatory. Like,
I think it's also the optics of, like, someone in a military uniform, like, with an M16.
Yeah, like let's say your purse.
It's stripped away all the pretense, and now it's
what's
just
your
like,
book bag.
You yeah, no, it's like what's no. Now we just do live in a military police state.
under a democratic city, under a democratic governor.
Well, this was the point. This is why she did this, because it's an election year. And Democrats are worried that crime is going to become an election thing. They're worried that crime is going to become an election wedge issue that like forces more people to the right.
So this is strictly theater, yeah. Like in the style of like Clinton and Gore. We're not those squishy Democrats of yesteryear. We're going to be tough on crime and destroy families for generations to come. Like, sometimes their theater, they don't understand, has repercussions for people. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, their theater, what the theater does is that, like, it actualizes, right? Like, I mean, and also, too, any time that you give any kind of credence to the right or accept their framing, you've already lost, right? You know?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I'm looking at this thing now. This was at a Kirsten Gillibrand event. This fucking killed me, dude. I was laughing my fucking ass off. This is who we have to like protect. This is who we're pandering to. This is why we're sending National Guard troops into the subways.
Oh my god!
Oh my god!
I can't tell.
I can't tell if
that's could be one of three things. Either that's like an old man yelling at the clouds, having a seizure like Aaron said, or that's a Pentecostal music service. He's got the Holy Ghost on him, and he's just sitting there dancing the jig with this.
The libations.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is from Twitter user at cat content only. I guess they organized a disruption at a Kirsten Gillibrand event. Sit down. Just like you're 83. You're so close to the end, and you just like in 30 seconds you half your entire time left on the earth. You know what I mean? Like you probably blocked a few arteries. Like you went home and just had a stroke in the bathroom just because
you
like, died
in sleep. I mean the thing is too that's so striking is just that. You know, for the past 4 years, when Trump was president, right, we heard about how much daylight there is between the Republicans and the Democrats, right? And then when Biden's got elected, we're back to normalcy, right? We're back to civility, all of this, right? You know, and then, you know, and I know we've made this point before, but the same motherfuckers who are screaming about kids in cages have no issue with kids being literally pulverized, right? And then just like these videos that are coming out, like there really is no daylight at all between them. I posted this, like between these people and Trump supporters that were yoking up protesters during protests in 2015. You
know?
Yeah.
Like I'm gonna just tell you right now, if one of these old ass motherfuckers, it's an enablism. This is just don't put your fucking hands on me, dog.
Right.
What if these motherfuckers put their hands on me? Come on, I mean that's the thing about it too, is that like they only have smoke, right? They're only conflictual, right? When it comes to like the left, right? Or when it comes to being confronted with things that they feel like are unpalatable, you know?
I'll tell you this, I wouldn't hit an old person, but I'd shake the shit out of one.
Just shake the shit and scare them.
And just grab and just shake the absolute hell out of it.
Oh man. Yeah, it's really astonishing. But that's the thing, it doesn't matter who wins. Like we will have a mad king. If it's exactly. Trump or Biden, we will have a mad king who's we will be subject to their very whims and impulses, and there's nothing we can do about it.
We'll be subject to the vagaries of a dying man, yo. A dying man clinging not only to the edge of life, but to the edge of power.
Well, let me ask y'all. Go ahead, Aaron. No.
I just want to say, just means that, you know, like, they have nothing to lose, you know. It's risk it all kind of behavior, mentality, you know. Go ahead, Tom.
What I was going to say is the Tardy boys live in sort of a frail mental state, the three of us. I've received, oh, yeah, late night phone calls from both of you. If,
yeah, if, I cried all night. I didn't get
received them from me, all that kind of stuff. You know, like when you're in such a poor state that you can't be trusted. Like your impulses are just not good. You know what I'm saying? Oh, yeah. Like, you go into a store and you don't really like, you just buy something you know you're not going to eat or use. You know, you just have this.
Dude, I just cooked food today and ate some chicken afterwards and it tasted like nothing. I was like, I would have thrown this out. I'm not even hungry right now.
Yeah. You just do things. You know, you just kind of do things for just no good reason, just because it's like, whatever. Now, imagine having all the power in the world and you're like you can feel the death rattle coming on every day.
Yeah.
What is that like?
having so much power, like, you know what I mean? But also, you're about to die.
Being that frail mental state.
Being that frail mental state. Jesus.
It's just disastrous things. Like, do you just, like, sometimes just, like, you know, I don't like what's going on over here. Let's just go do a bombing campaign. You know what I mean? And you do that in the same way that, like, we would impulse shop on eBay or something. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like me buying a pair of Jordans.
Yeah. Right. You don't need them.
I don't need them, but I want them, though.
But you see this, like, in the New York Times and the Atlantic and the Washington Post, all three this week did, like, a full court press on, like, how dangerous nuclear weapons are. It's like, yeah.
Hey, oh, no shit. That's that incisive level of analysis we've come to expect from the Atlantic.
This is why people trust the media, man.
Well, everyone knows that we're subject to mad emperors and mad kings who there's no feedback loop anymore, right? Like, there's no... Because, like, this is the thing, like, people have, like... said, like, you know, for all of its imperfections, for all of its flaws, at least America is a democracy. And it's like, yeah, but it's not, because, like, you still can't decide who the candidate is. They gift you the candidates and then you decide among them. There is no actual democratic process, and that's been obvious for a while, right? But like, it didn't really matter because various regimes of accumulation and banking practices and regulation and stuff could paper over that. But it doesn't, there's not enough juice anymore to do that. Rate of profit has gone down. Things have become deracinated and, you know what I mean? Like, just flimsy. And so now we all have to pretend like we don't live in some sort of, like, de facto monarchy, where we don't have any real say over anything. And honestly, like, it's really wild how everything does drift farther to the right. Like, you know, one of the last progressives in Congress, like Barbara Lee, like, she's probably going to lose her election this year. You've got, like, protesters screaming at AOC, and she's like, but my feelings, these are my feelings, and you can't, you know what I'm saying?
You know,
it's just like...
You know what it is, man? What I noticed, too, is, like, you were talking about, like, just this, like, not even, like, choice anymore, right? Like, these candidates are selected for you. And, you know, obviously, you know, there's what's happening in Palestine, right? That is, you know, sucked, you know, a substantial amount of air out of any energy that would have went toward the Democratic primary, right? With these uncommitted votes we're seeing. But also, like, I mean... If this atrocity wasn't happening, right, it's still two candidates, right, that neither party or constituent really wanted. I mean, I guess Trump, the people are excited for that, but even Trump feels kind of like pastoral now, you know? He feels almost antiquated and dated, you know what I mean? And we have these two candidates that are kind of foisted upon us and really, like, kind of foisted historically, right, upon history, I guess, right? Or history has foisted them upon us. And, like, it just feels so atrophied, you know? You know what I mean? Like, there's just no liveliness to it, no verve to it. I saw that Biden apparently, well, this is because of the protesters that have been heckling him at events and whatnot. But I heard that he's not even going to start, like, his rallies are going to be, like, secret, you know? Like, there's a rally, I don't even call him a rally, right? But there's an event here in Atlanta this weekend, and I think tomorrow... And I'm planning to go protest, and we don't even know where it is. because they're trying to keep the location under wraps. So you know what I mean? So this is like running a presidential campaign where motherfuckers don't even see you.
Yeah, that's it's like a, it's like a one of those hip pop-ups, you know what I mean? It's like, the lamest pop-up you could imagine, which is saying
like,
something.
Like a food truck?
Yeah.
Buy to serve ice cream?
Yeah.
Can you imagine running for president on a if-you-know-you-know basis?
But bro, if you be there at the right time, then you might catch it. But
it's going to be half-assed like the Willy Wonka pop-up, though. Like you're going to go in like a guy in like a LBJ mask and a Nixon mask are going to be like playing fucking checkers and like smoking cigarettes or something.
He's gonna be playing chess, but there's not a person across from him. It's just a pigeon sitting in a stool.
It's a Bill Clinton impersonator, like playing like not the saxophone, but like one of those like electronic saxophones you had when you were a kid. They have like three buttons,
like the Fisher Price one.
Yeah, and they'll be like they'll have potions, obviously, because they gotta have potions.
You gotta have vials of potions.
And then it'll just be the bartender from the Willy Wonka pop up there while all this is happening, or it'll be all those same reenactors creating the how they do the Democratic presidents or the Republican presidents in the style of dogs playing poker.
Yeah,
it'll be them recreating that. And maybe sprinkling in a few of the dogs playing poker for good measure.
But that'll be half-assed, too. Like, two or three of the dogs will be dead. One of them has, like, really bad, like, hot spots. And it's like,
one of them has a cold.
It's like licking its mange.
Sarcoptic mange.
Yeah.
I'll tell you right now, though. I would vote for one of them dogs, you know, over either one of these two guys.
I'm going to mean this in all honesty. I would vote for a geriatric dog with flea dermatitis, heartworm, and parvo before I would vote for either of these guys.
Dude, it does seem like, because, okay, this is the thing about the uncommitted vote, which, like, I support in theory. I don't, you know, I mean, I guess it's good. Like, I don't really feel like it's gonna make much of a difference either way, because the thing is like you saw this week, like Nikki Haley dropped out basically, like, I get these Apple updates on my phone, and it's just like you could hear the sighing through my phone. This like Trump,
so he was like
Trump is gonna be elected again, he's gonna be the nominee. You can like hear the Apple News sighing.
Siri was like,
so damn, going on SNL didn't pay any dividends for her, huh?
Yeah, but then there was a headline where, as a result, Biden is like now pandering, and we've called this for months now. We definitely have been calling this as long ago as the summer, especially like during like the inflation stuff and Bidenomics and everything. But like, it seems like they're tacked now. Biden said there's a place for Nikki Haley supporters in my campaign.
Oh my fucking God.
So it's like that's the thing. Like the uncommitted thing doesn't really matter because they've got the nomination cinched. I'm not saying don't do it, because I do think that there is some utility in like building those bonds and, you know, making connections and stuff. But it does feel like, say what you want about Bernie, I obviously, like, he was never going to work. There was all kinds of problems with that. But I'm noticing this across the board. It definitely seems that pretty much every regard, the 2010s were kind of like this brief moment of reform and possibility in all kinds of ways, even though we had a Trump presidency. I still think about like things like criminal justice reform, for example. In Kentucky, you had people like Rand Paul even saying that like we have to cut down on incarceration. Incarceration rates are too high. So like there was, even among the right wing, there was even a little bit of energy towards reforming the criminal justice system, for example. Well, now in Kentucky, there's this thing called like the Kentucky Safe Act or something, Keep Kentucky Safe Act, something like that. I mean, it lowers the felony threshold for like theft back down to like $200. I mean, like, you know, you can basically be hit with a felony just for like accidentally walking away with like your homie's like cell phone or some shit. You know what I mean? Like it increases incarceration duration, all this stuff. I guess what I'm saying is that like what was once a brief moment of potential reform and possibility has now fallen away, and we're all sliding right back into the most insane carceral solutions to all these things. The most insane, you know, obviously we've talked about homelessness, right?
Yeah.
Like they're not even pretending to do anything about it now. They're just telling you, oh, the economy is good, shut the fuck up.
And criminalizing homelessness in like a really fucking heavy-handed way too, you know? Yeah. Instead of like doing something about that policy-wise, they're just treating it like, you know,
yeah,
any other crime.
Do y'all feel like part of this reaction that we're seeing is, I think one of the running themes in the show is the climate apocalypse, right? As a sort of ambient background noise, right? And sort of this sense, you know, this ubiquitous sense that like that shit's about to get real, you know, and that what we need to do is either have a solution like Israel does, right, where we limit social mobility. We surveil people, we kill them, you know, we bomb the shit out of them as a captive population. Or do you guys also think that part of that backlash is sort of, you know, I mean, three things, right? Maybe the Bernie movement, sure, right? Black Lives Matter and other grassroots movements. We can even go back to the Dakota Access Pipeline stuff, right? And also, too, I think the pandemic, you know. I think the spate of unionizations that we saw during the pandemic, right? The fact that, you know, I think Terrence, you brought this point, you pointed this out a lot before that, you know, like the government was actually doing something for people positively, you know what I mean? And people could see that, you know? And I mean, I don't know if this is so much a conscious effort, but it does seem like, you know, for a minute, you know, people were able to peer through the cracks of the contradiction and saw that there was another possibility, whether it was through Bernie, whether it was through the demonstrations that we saw in the streets, or whether through unionization. And then they were just like, nah, they just closed that window and that aperture, you know? Mm-hmm. I don't know if any of that makes sense, or no, I'm just kind of spitballing here, but you know what I mean?
I think you're right. I think that, like, I think that the pandemic was probably the high point of a lot of that stuff. I mean, they expanded unemployment benefits. They had like injected a lot of stuff into the welfare state that like we hadn't seen in a really long time. Yeah. And I guess like we can like talk all day about like why this all being rolled back now and why the horizons are now being like limited and narrowed once again. But I've really never seen anything like this in my lifetime where you had a brief moment, like not even after Obama, because I think that like, you know, everybody, we all knew, like nobody wants to admit it, but we all knew when we voted for Obama in 2008, like he was going to do what he did. We all knew he was going to, he wasn't going to fall through on any of that stuff.
I'll tell you right now. I was crying when he spoke
at Hyde Park. I was bawling my eyes out. Like Oprah's there dapping him up, and I'm just like, hell yeah, that's my president, and I'm just sobbing.
Listen, man, it was like for me, of course I was crying too, it was emotional, but, and I mean, you know, I was just like, dude, there's no way they're gonna let this brother, a black man, there's no way they didn't let JFK, you know what I'm saying? Like, you know what I mean? Like, with JFK is not like a progressive like paragon or anything like that, right? But like, much less a black guy do any of these things that he said he was gonna do? Hell no. You know what I mean? Hell
yeah.
No. Okay.
But
well,
you know, I hope though.
I'm sorry. I mean, you're right. I mean, I don't know. I was very jaded in 2008 already. So it's like, maybe that's the difference. But I,
not me. I thought, no, man, we finally did it.
No, you were smarter. You were smarter, Terrence.
I wouldn't say that. You're just smarter. I wouldn't say that. I guess it's just, I guess my point here, though, is that, like, compared to Obama, there had been actual examples of potential movement in areas. For example, like, you know, I've been on the prison abolitionist left since 2012, just about. And you had seen, in my opinion, there was some movement towards reform between the years 2012 and 2020, 2021 or so. It definitely feels like that is all being slowly rolled back now and peeled back. And I mean, I don't know. I'm not trying to, like, you know, make anyone doomer or whatever. I guess I'm just trying to point out that, like, structurally, the drift of things is definitely to the right. And when you've got, like, the liberals basically campaigning on right-wing politics, like sending the National Guard into the subways or beefing up the strongest border security bill we've ever seen, then, I mean, that kind of just gives away the ball game here, that, like, leftists can't really affect this in any way, because this isn't really our game anymore. You know what I'm saying?
We are not in the room. If we were not in the room before, we might have been outside the room by the door.
Right.
You know, there's that window.
Exactly.
Yeah, we could hear, or we could look through the window. Right. You know, we'd fog up the glass, maybe, you know, make a little smiley face and be like, we see you, motherfuckers. Mm. Now, like, they are down the hall in, like, air in a vacuum, or, like, in a soundproof room.
With guards outside
and dogs and shit. And, I mean, like, I don't know, man. Like, another thing, too, is just, like, sort of, like, how... You know, you see that when the liberals really feel like they have nothing to lose, you know what I mean? Like, they don't need the left. They don't need young people. They don't need, I would say they don't even need people of color, right? Because, I mean, you're bombing the shit out of another Middle Eastern country, right? And you're saying fuck you to Muslims and Arabs in America, you know? But you really see how, like, and I hate to say the term, you know, mask off, because it's just such a, like, a trite kind of term, but... You really see, like Terrence, I think you'd mentioned it too, like, these aren't even contradictions anymore. They're just kind of, like, just bald-faced, like, kind of truths, you know what
I mean? Yeah,
they're just facts. And you see that they wholeheartedly, you know, sincerely just adopt, you know what I mean? Like, they just take not just adopt the framing of the right, but they actualize it, they enact it, you know what I mean? They carry that torch.
Yeah.
And I just want to say to people, it's like, you know... If you're telling people, like, oh, you're not going to vote for, you're going to help Trump win if you don't vote for Joe Biden. It's like, well, dude, like, who's president right now? You know what I mean?
Well, dude,
like,
there was a headline. Go ahead, Tom.
No, go ahead.
I was just going to say, there was a headline the other day where Biden was like, it was an NBC News thing, I think, where Biden was like, we're asking Trump to work with us on this border. We're asking the Republicans. And, like, obviously these fucking, like, lib pedants, like, got into the community notes and they were like, this is false. Biden did not say let's work with Trump. And then you read the article and it's like, actually, Biden did say let's work with the Republicans. So, like, what are you talking about? Like, there is...
Well, and not only that, because that's a good preamble to the point I was going to make, is that... Did you see where one of his staffers was holding this up as a point of pride that, like, Biden works with people that he disagrees with all the time? Just the other day, he called Larry Summers.
Yeah.
And what it is they all share the same class interests, and so they have an interest in working together or whatever, but they sell it to, like, John Q. American guys working across the aisle as something valiant that we should all be striving to. But I personally don't want to work across the aisle with Count Chocula, you know what I mean?
I was just about to say, Larry Summers is like this Nosferatu motherfucker who keeps cropping back up in fucking public life to say some stupid shit about how we should send children back to the mines or something, yo. Like,
is it, in that same article, he also said he consults with Mitch McConnell, who this week endorsed Trump. He consults with the guy who endorsed his opponent.
Yeah, bro.
So it's like, bro. You can't make the argument here that, like, that you cannot make the argument that, like, a vote for... you can't make the argument that not voting is a vote for Trump, because you're telling me that voting for Biden is voting for Trump.
Right.
Bro,
yeah.
You know what it's like, dog? You know what it's like? You know how you got AT&T and T-Mobile, and they all got, like, the subsidiaries, like, or, like, I have a Metro PCS, you know, which is under T-Mobile. And where I live, there's a T-Mobile store right across the street from a Metro PCS store, right? So it's the same goddamn thing. You could go to either way, you know what I mean? this is the same. And listen, and I know people could be like, well, that's a trite, simplistic point to say that they're both the same. But, I mean, dude, if if on the border, which is like something that is like, okay, we were just talking about like reaction in American politics, the border, you mentioned this, Tom, a couple of weeks ago, the border is an issue that just rears its ugly head every election, right? Then we have to rally, right, the reactionary American spirit to make these comfortable white people in Buckhead feel comfortable, right? Go ahead, Tom.
No.
If they're going to work with them on the border, dog, what, like, how are you telling me there's daylight between them? You know what I mean? Like, come the fuck on, dude.
Dude, it is a rubber room thing. 2020, the whole reason this motherfucker got elected was his policy was a refutation of the appearance of Trump's draconian border policies. And now in the next election, he wants to work with him on border policy because everything's shifted so rightward because of this crime narrative and all this shit. That is fucking insane. I'm sorry. It really makes me want to go take a long walk off a short pier.
It does, because what makes it insane, what makes you feel insane, is that they make you feel like you're either childish or trite for pointing out these things. And it's like, there's nothing childish or trite about getting ourselves out of the fucking colossal mess we have gotten ourselves in. Like, I read this op-ed today in the New York Times where David Wallace Wells had interviewed John Kerry about, like, climate change. And, like, even John fucking Kerry was just like, yeah, we kind of failed. We kind of failed. Climate change is pretty, I mean, like, we didn't do.
Me, I'm checking out soon, but you guys are fucked.
Yeah.
We kind of failed. That's like the existential version of we tortured some folks.
The eggs, yeah. The thing is like there's no. I'm not telling people to like do nothing. It's just that the things that I personally think people should be doing, I can't say on a public platform.
Yeah, I can't tell you.
I mean
right
that genuinely.
Can't
I'm
even
not
say
I'm,
them online.
Yeah, I'm saying this as a human being. Like I can't say. I mean, I am. I have a public-facing persona, and I have a underground-facing persona, right? So it's
I'm trying to be a writer, dog. I'm not trying to have these motherfuckers listen to me. Like, what did he say? Should happen to whom?
Yeah, and so like I guess I'm just saying that like the point is that if you're shut out of these things, then there's I don't know, man. Maybe there is a world in 4 years where there is some sort of electoral breakthrough where the confines of the system become so restrictive that there has to be some sort of intervention or shattering of the status quo, and then you can break through there. It seems, though, that like that was attempted, and we got as close as we'll ever get to it in 2016 and 2020. And so then you have to like start looking at other ways to do it. Me personally, I got a lot out of going and standing outside of Rupp Arena and screaming at UK Wildcat fans as they exited the building. That really helped me. I felt something.
Felt but, alive.
But yeah, I don't know.
The one dividend that I can see the uncommitted movement doing is in Michigan, only because, you know, if you siphon off 100,000 votes from Metro Detroit, particularly in the Palestinian diaspora and the Arab diaspora, votes that otherwise would have went to him, that could theoretically cost Biden an important swing state. But other than that, it's like sort of seems
yeah well,
like a we, symbolic well, gesture more than anything.
We've called this for months, though, that like what they're going to do in this. And I personally think that this motivates their strategy on Israel Gaza. I really do think that they have made the calculus. They've made the decision that the Haley voters, those types
are going to come over,
are going to come over. And they might be right. I don't know. But I'm just saying if that's the calculus, there's no place in the room for us there.
But I want to even project even a little bit further.
Yeah, we're not even within a range of debate. No. if that's what they're banking on.
We're not in the room, but I want to project a little further, not to be doomerish, but you know. And you know, we were talking in the chat, and you know, I talk a lot of shit online, but I don't know. I think even though shit's looking up in the air for Biden, I don't know. I think he might win, but I don't know, right? But let's say that he did lose, right? Let's say that happened. Like, I'm not. Like, when I say it wouldn't matter, I mean that they would not learn anything from that defeat, right? Like I think that the committed, the uncommitted movement, I definitely think it has merit, but I also think that, I don't know how to say it. I'm going to be careful about saying this because I don't want to disparage what, you know, anybody's like effort or cause, right? Especially for such an atrocity. But I think that there's this mistaken like assumption that that means that this is going to change the liberals, right? The Democrats, the Biden administration, right? This is going to change their position, right?
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that pressure won't. I do think that protests do. I do think that the demonstrations that we've been seeing do. But when it comes to like, you know, translating that into like, we won't vote for you, I really mean this with all my heart. I don't think they care if they lose, right?
No,
I think that they're trying to win. Yeah. I don't think that this is going to change. I think that if they lost, that it would change their minds anyway, because as you've talked about, said Terrence, they are locked into this historical groove. And unless something paradigm shifting and shattering happens and occurs that rocks them out of it, that shakes off the dust off this kind of like geriatric atrophied system, you know, nothing is, I mean, not on their part, they're not going to do anything, right? You know what I mean? Yeah. I don't mean to be doomerish about it, but I'm just being realistic.
No, I think that that's the truth. I think that that's honestly the God's honest truth. And that's, again, that's not to say don't put any effort into that. Don't put any energy into that, because I do think there's merit in it, in the sense that I think there's merit in pretty much every political action you do. You know what I'm saying? Like, because you learn things and you build bonds. That's, again, I don't think that necessarily is going to translate to any change on Biden. I mean, you've seen them, you've seen the Biden administration. This is how insulting it is. The Biden administration is completely aware that their stance on this is unpopular with the left. And that's why they keep trotting out Kamala every 2 or 3 weeks to say, we need a ceasefire. I mean, like, the most recent one was a parody. It was like, we need a... You remember that tweet she had where she was like, we're doing student loan forgiveness for 30% of people with a great grandfather who served in the Korean War. You know what I'm saying? Like, it was that,
yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, they,
who was a dill farmer?
Who's at least 12% Hungarian on their mother's side. Yeah.
They did that this week where she was like, we need a ceasefire for 6 weeks and only on Israel's terms, and Hamas has to. And obviously, people were like, are they pivoting? They're changing. No, they're not. They're not pivoting. They're not changing. What they're doing is they're acknowledging that this is not a popular position with the left. They're going to attack right in the election while making rhetorical gestures to the left. I mean, the fucking...
Using... can I just point out...
They're focus grouping.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm just pointing out the obvious thing, too. Just not to cut you off, Terrence, using Kamala Harris, which they always trot out the black woman, right? Whenever they want to appeal, right, to certain constituencies.
Did you see the meme that she posted? She was walking across the Pettus Bridge.
Bro.
That was insane.
Yo, my blood pressure, like, instantly.
What did that do to you?
I just bought a new phone and I had to put it down because I was about to throw that shit. I was like, I'm telling you, y'all, it's so fucking bad. Yo.
What was the thing? It was like, history is a relay race, which, for, you know, just starting out, like, that's an amazingly bourgeois statement. Like, in the pantheon of, like, bourgeois history, history is a relay race is fucking amazing.
I mean, that's literally the opposite of what Martin Luther King said, that history doesn't roll in on the wheels of inevitability. What are you talking about, dog?
Yeah, there is no baton passing, like, in and of itself, like, inherently.
No, and once you've killed 30,000 people and are threatening to kill another 30 to 100 more thousand people, like, there's no baton to be passed. You forfeited the right to hold the fucking baton.
Yeah. You're passing grenades is what you're passing. That's what you're doing at this point.
But, like, they realize this, they acknowledge it, and they're going to keep cynically deploying it all the way up until November. I think the thing is that, no, I don't know. It's,
God
it's,
damn. The thought of Kamala Harris coming out every couple of weeks and, like, doing something, you know, shit.
I don't know, Zed, like, fucking, like, fugue state, yo.
I think the thing is, this realignment was inevitable. It's just weird to watch it happen because, like, economically, it seems like the two parties, there is a kind of broad consensus on what needs to be done with regards to the economy. They'll keep interest rates relatively high for a while. they're going to keep cracking down on the border in order to replace the gains to the labor market they would get from an open border. They're going to make child labor legal again. You know what I'm saying? Like, because child labor as a mechanism for regulating the labor market actually is very conducive to both parties' politics, especially when it comes to like trans moral panic and all this groomer stuff. I mean, they're not talking, the Republicans aren't talking about that as much as they were a year ago. However, it's still manifested in just like, what was that Alabama ruling from a few weeks ago where like that Alabama Supreme Court judge was like ruled all IVF embryos human life. You know what I'm saying? Like,
that's insane.
I think this is all tied.
Are you thinking about having a baby? Then it's protected. That idea is protected.
Oh, we hate groomers, but also it's, you can marry a 10-year-old in most places.
I think like that's how they paper over the some of the contradictions at the heart of their economic policy is the politics of children and childbearing is very conducive to that, and it allows them to keep a very restrictive border policy. At the same time, we call it restrictive, but as we talked about with like Alexander Avinia, they do allow people in under various criteria, and that's because the labor market needs those workers. Like that's, you know, that's the unspoken secret of like our border policy. Anyways, the point I'm trying to make is there is broad agreement on the economic aims right now. Even if the Republicans don't call it Bidenomics, and even if the Biden people don't call it neoliberalism, it is this weird hybrid fusion form of like post-neoliberalism. It's weird.
Franken-liberalism.
Was that, Tom?
Franken-liberalism.
Franken-neoliberalism. Well,
it's Franken-liberalism with, like, I don't want to just say fascistic characteristics because that's already inherent. But again, it's more so like Israeli characteristics. You know what I mean? Again, like
Franken-liberalism with Israeli characteristics.
Yeah, it's like this. It's like just this captive, I mean, this captive populist siege mentality. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I don't know, man. I just think we're seeing this played out and reproduced and reverberated in national politics now, right?
Well, they'll keep doing it because you can paper over the economic stuff to a certain extent because, like we've talked about, the fucking economy is largely kept afloat through defense spending, and I like one in every five jobs is police adjacent in some way. Remember that was a statistic we found a few years ago that like it's not like indirect policing, but like security firms and prison guards and all that kind of stuff.
You know what? Think about that, Eva, Terrence. When I had to take you to the emergency room a few years ago, there was literally an armed guard that stood outside your room the whole time.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Like, why?
Why? Why does he get a gun? Like, what the fuck, dude?
That, like, yeah, 125-pound me. Like, I'm not a threat to anybody.
And also hampered by dehydration. And
I mean, just to have, like, the implication of death and violence in a place that's meant to heal people. Well, sure, people die, but you know what I'm saying? Where people are supposed to be healed. Like,
well,
that's just so...
And that's another part, is that the healthcare sector is an extremely overgrown sector in the economy. Like, people talk about, like... I don't remember who I was listening to talk about this the other day, but like people talk about like the steel industry in China, and economists in the United States are like, oh, it's this extremely, and they talk about the oil industry in Russia, like, oh, there's these overgrown industries, these overgrown sectors, and it's like that's what the healthcare industry is in the United States. I mean, all these things are kind of primed for a certain kind of collapse, but if the government can just kind of like underwrite it and backstop it for a little while, then that's fine. What's happening, the realignment occurs, is that the liberals then turn to the people that are extremely disaffected from the Republicans and are really creeped out by people saying Sidney Sweeney is the Lacanian super predator who's, you know, like they get like they're like the Democrats can sweep up from that all day because there are quite a few people in this country who are really weirded out by that, whereas the Republicans just can absorb all those people who like get really creeped
with
out
the
by
weirdest
like
positions.
Yeah. but like, because that's the thing. Like, by the way, because that's another weird thing that's going. I have spent so much time thinking about this in the last 24 hours, guys. I don't know what the fuck is going on. But like, I told this to Tom last night. If you don't think Sydney Sweeney is hot, like, I just have to logically assume that you don't fuck humans. You must dogs and horses and stuff.
Aliens, bro. Lovecraftian creatures, elder gods, you know, that exist between universes. Like, bro, it's this weird thing that I've realized. Where it's like, all right, yo, it's like, okay, you do have, like, this moral panic, right? And it's mostly, like, you know, predicated on upon, like, you know, the LGBTQ community, right? But there is also, like, this I don't know how to say it. It's this, like, prudeness, right? Like, this kind of classical, I don't want to say classical conservative prudeness, because these people are some of the horniest, most perverted, deranged people alive politically, right? But, like, it's like, on the one hand, they want to, like, assert their masculinity, right? And their hypersexuality. But at the same time, they're afraid of titties. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. It's just like, what the fuck? Like, do you want to be horny, or do you want to? I mean, I guess that's the enigma of America. America's an incredibly horny country, but it's also very prude, right?
Well, they do.
I mean, I guess you get that from the British, you know?
Yeah.
Is that from the British?
Yeah. Come by it honest, yeah. What it is they're turned on by the idea of repressing somebody else's sexuality.
And their own. Yeah. They're turned on by the idea of repressing their own sexuality.
You're right, yeah. You're right.
That's
right. I think I've been a bad boy.
It's a prude kink, yeah.
Yeah, it's a prude kink. That's exactly right. And this is the thing. I think that explains a significant portion of them. However, I do also think that a significant portion of them have kind of bought into, like, what used to be a position on the 90s countercultural left, which is that society, bourgeois society as a whole, which is crazy. Not even Marxists, not even committed communists really believe this. But that bourgeois society as a whole must be entirely and thoroughly rejected, every single aspect of it, including beauty standards. And again, the left is good to critique that, right? Because, like, beauty standards is definitely something that should be critiqued and rejected, because that is informed by capitalist bourgeois social relations.
Yeah,
the right doesn't have that class critique, and so they just reject it all writ large. And so this has made me start wondering, like, well, what's the limits to that? If you reject all of it to the point that you're even saying that, like, conventionally attractive people aren't attractive, like, this is what I'm asking. You remember when back in the day they used to be like, if we start letting gays marry, they're going to start fucking dogs. Like, are we going to start seeing them actual just,
oh,
like,
do
I? If we see supernaturally beautiful people on TV, people might start getting ideas and might start having babies. But
this is what I'm asking. Are they going to back themselves into, like, reverse engineer themselves into actually fucking dogs? They're going to start fucking horses and dogs and goats and being like, no, this is what's hot, bro. Like, girl, you can't be fucking chicks and dudes. You got fuck goats.
And then they'll say that, yeah, some group of, presumably white Europeans from antiquity did this as a practice, and it actually boosts testosterone by 600%.
Yo, you know Alexander the Great fuck goats, bro. You didn't know that, did you?
but you didn't know that, though, did you? That's what they don't want you to know.
12 easy tricks.
Dude, you're so right, Aaron. They're gonna be attracted to animals, elder gods, supernatural spirits. They're gonna get really into dead languages. They're gonna start living in caves. Like, there's no, like, I am just so weirded out by, like, how weird they are about Sydney Sweeney.
It's bizarre, man. It's not like, their fixation on just certain figures. I don't know. It probably speaks to something going on in celebrity culture too, and, like, how, like, you know, I don't know. These type of people have never really sort of been invited to that party, like, wholesale, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. You know, like, even Trump, who is, like, you know, is like a pop culture whore, you know, is like, I think probably the one thing that keeps Trump up at night is that probably if anything, okay, is the idea that he is like a pariah
FOMO. Yeah. He's got FOMO.
Yeah.
Yeah, FOMO, yeah. Yeah, you're right. And you know what? His supporters live vicariously through him,
with that same audience too. And you know, but what I was thinking,
but that's the thing, you're right, it's vicariously, but that's why they have the white hat thing. They think that he's in there fighting on their behalf. Yeah. Obviously the white hat thing is the theory that he's a pedophile fighting pedophiles on their behalf.
But it's not that
Biden, he's absorbing he's abusing kids for them.
Oh my god. This is how fucking weird they all are.
It's just like, I think it's just like too, it's like, I don't know, man, just this sort of like projection that they have. Because I guess you're right.
It's like they get off on repressing their own sexuality, you know what I mean? And their own wants and desires. And I mean, it's just so weird to me. You know, this is what I was going
to
say.
And their own alienation, I have to assume. Right?
Yes, like, and their own alienation.
There has to be some sort of like sexual resonance there with their alienation, I would have to imagine.
You know what else I was thinking too? This is what I wanted to say. I was thinking too is that they're always so ready, like these cultural critics or right culturists or whatever. They're always so ready to point to things that, all right, I'll give an example. Remember when what video was it? Music video had that guy posted and said that this was in 2000, you know, back then everybody was like carefree and having a good time. And I think it was a cover of a Michael Jackson song, right?
Oh, it's Alien Ant Farm. Yeah.
And it was Alien Ant Farm, yeah. Right?
It was Hanania. I think it was the Richard Hanania weirdo.
Yeah. And it was like, it was just like, okay, one, you can still do all of those things, right? But they love to point to things like Sydney Sweeney and saying, women and sexuality is back on. You know what I mean? And it's just like, dude, these things are always apparent, right? These things in cult, like none of these things have ever faded away. And none of these things are an indication of a decadent society. These things have constantly been happening. And you can always point to them and either reminisce about them and have nostalgia or fucking complain about them like you always have. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I have a solution to this. I think we could nip it in the bud real quick. Did you ever read that Radio War Nerd blog post about, like, if we had just hung, not even all the Confederates, but if we had hung a few key Confederates, that we could have had a much better outcome, post-Civil War and abolition of slavery? Yeah. If we applied the same thing and we just, here's all we have to do is just publicly execute Richard Hanania, Chris Rufo, and the libs of TikTok chick.
Matt Walsh, yeah.
Matt Walsh.
We don't even have to do Matt Walsh. Matt Walsh could float around.
He would
be defanged if we took out that three-headed hydra.
Right. He would probably kill himself.
But, yeah, you know what? Fuck it. For good measure, let's kill Matt Walsh, too. Better safe than sorry. And I'm not talking like we just, you know, shoot him in the head and throw him in a hole. I mean, we have to, like, King David cut Goliath's head off and carried around the town square.
Yeah, put it, like, on the pyre. Put it on the spire.
We need somebody wearing a cloak and holding a scythe, riding a pale horse, having all four of their heads like on kind of a string thing. You know what I mean?
Massive, like, keychain. Basically,
their heads are banging together, slapping together.
Yeah, and just blood and sinew dripping down all over, like kind of staining the pale horse's coat and stuff. And I'm going to tell you something. America would become 40% less fucking weird and fucked up overnight.
I go 100%, dog. 100%.
I mean, truly, there were two, not one, but two articles yesterday that were exceedingly bizarre, like not normal about Sydney Sweeney. The first one was in The Spectator. Sydney Sweeney in the return of real body positivity. Yay, boobs are back. Sydney Sweeney made engagement farming easy with her cleavage revealing curtain.
Bro, can I just say, bro? Yo, no human being who has ever existed in the history of this planet has ever thought that boobs was not in, dog. Titties have never, immemorial. You trying to be titties are out, bro? Titties have never been out. What the fuck
are you talking about? Boys, they're the source of life. I mean, really, when you get down to it, Like, the reason we love titties is because they give us life. They've always given us life.
Bro,
literally,
I've seen people,
we suckle, we get our nutrition.
Nutrition listen, from them. Like, comfort, listen, even. Just comfort.
I'm not a Dune guy, but I've seen people talk about the alien orb that that Paul Atreides sucks the juice out of. Those are titties, bro. Titties are that cosmic orb of that give life, yo.
Yeah.
Come on, son.
And then the other exceedingly abnormal one was in the National Post. I think that was that's a Canadian site. Wokeness is no match for Sydney Sweeney's undeniable beauty. Are Sydney Sweeney's breasts double D harbingers of the death of woke?
Oh, my God.
Yo, these people are so horny, they should go to jail. Not even go to jail. They should be executed.
No, bro. Yeah, like, listen. This...
Yo, this yeah. is insane, dog.
I ask you, like, are these the signs of a healthy culture that is, you know, adjusted well to, you know what I mean, to human life? This is what I'm saying. Like, if you go too far down this rabbit hole, you really will eventually walk yourself into being like, humans aren't even attractive. I don't even think humans are. Have you ever seen a horse's ass? Now we're talking.
You ever thought about fucking a ladybug? Sure,
you're possible. Dude, you're gonna be also... walking down the street and some guy's gonna be humping the sidewalk and like, yo, check out my girl. It's like I can't see it. A ladybug that like 2 centimeters large. Yo, me and my girl just chilling.
Just squished and shit.
Yeah.
Also too, dude, like you just brought up a really good point. I forgot who tweeted it, but I've been just thinking about this past couple of years, especially with the trans panic, especially when it's really, really fucking bad. Was it last year or 2 summers ago, right? Not that it hasn't ever been horrible, but I mean when it was just disgusting, right? Fucking every other week, right? It was some libs of TikTok video, right? But it was like, you know, like, these people are incredibly maladjusted, you know? Like, it's such a farce that they want to convince everyone else that the things that they believe in are like the baseline, right? That this is the baseline of normalcy, you know? And that this is what every American should want. And it's like, I forgot what group it was, but a conservative group. But they were talking about, like, bans on consensual sex or something. And I was like, dude... What the fuck are you doing? Like, I mean, first of all, don't you believe in procreate? I mean, I don't know. Forget even their because their hypocrisy doesn't even make sense to point out. It's like, who do you think on planet Earth? I mean, I guess there are people who are. I mean, sure, I guess there are people who are I'm not going to judge you, right? But for the majority of human beings on the planet, at least in America, you're not going to get more bored with that shit, dog.
Yeah. I love how many caveats you had to add to that.
I did.
Yeah, I had to sprinkle in.
Bunch of qualifiers. Try to be polite to the ace community, you know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, I think the thing behind Sydney Sweeney and all that, like, beyond it just being like a psychosexual repression or all this other stuff, I really do think it's more along the lines of or even like a psychological Napoleon complex or anything at the psychological level. I really do think it's more of a sociological expression of something, which is that I think that right-wingers have to reject society in its totality. That, like, every aspect of society has become so infiltrated. This is the bizarre thing about right-wingers, man, is that they will sometimes occasionally land on the diagnosis of something without understanding any of its underlying causes. And in this case, they have weirdly picked up, for example, like the beauty standards thing. They have weirdly picked up that in a capitalist society under bourgeois social relations, you do see all these bizarre manifestations of culture, these manifestations of sexual abnormality or let's just call them beauty standards in general, right?
Yeah, like of thinness, that being buxom or having a fat ass, for example, is not something. Well, actually, that's changed very much in the past decade or so. The BBL is having the time of its life right now.
I think they recognize that these things are culturally and socially constructed. I guess that's the point I'm trying to make.
Yeah,
the reason those are socially and socially constructed. culturally and socially constructed is because of capitalist social relations. Now, you could say, you could look at ancient Greece and you could look at medieval Europe and say, like, what are the beauty standards in those places? Those are all in my extreme.
To be shaped like a pear.
Yes, like that was that. Like that was hot.
Yeah, be a pear-shaped woman.
There's nothing objectively or subjectively good or bad about any of those things. It's just that these are all in our current society, they basically exist as marketing tools to sell people shit. And no matter
what you look like, to be honest with you.
Also there is a social control function, which is that you can make people feel like shit all the time about their own bodies. Yeah. And then they have to then consume their way out of it or further into it or whatever. But I think that, like, the conservatives, there's not really a class analysis there. There's nothing really deeper there. So they come up with these extremely bizarre fucking approaches to it.
Can I just point out, that's a really good point. This totalizing rejection, I guess.
Yeah.
It's a good point because, I mean, even look at it politically, right? Like, in the actual sphere of political activity, you know, I think about, you know, things that Obama might have wanted to do, right? You know what I mean? Which, you know, they weren't these progressive milestones or anything. I think, you know, I'm far from it. I think one of the first things was, if I'm wrong, anyone can call me up. But I think, you know, trying to privatize Social Security, right, during his first administration, you know, and these were just like preliminary talks, never went anywhere. But even Republicans rejected that. And that's something that, you know what I mean? Like even things that, like, that they would be for, if it's presented through a lens or through an avenue, right, that they already inherently reject, whether it's through liberalism, you know, they'll be like, nah, we don't want that shit. It's like, dude, you guys have been fucking championing this shit for the past like decade or so, or 20
right.
years. But it's because it's a liberal doing it, and because you hate liberalism so much, you reject it, you know?
Yeah, I think that is a big part of it. And again, I just wonder what the limitations, like, what are the limits of that? How long can you keep doing that?
I'll spoil it for you to death. I mean, it's a death draft.
Or to the beginning of life, which might be death as well. We might go back to like a protozoic like life form. You know what I'm saying? They might be trying to like just peel back all of these cultural markers and
technological
advances.
They're sexually attracted
advances.
To the primordial ooze. You guys just want to fuck the primordial ooze.
You just want to fuck the ooze, bro.
Look, we all know that having sex in a hot tub is impossible. However, having sex in the primordial ooze? Now, that might be something. I might fuck a protozoa in the primordial.
I might fuck my great, 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 great.
It ain't weird if we come from that, right?
It ain't weird if we family, right?
Protozoa and dick have a bitch laid up.
Me, but dick got to scream it.
Well, I think that like all these things, like in the aggregate, have you know, just to sort of like start tying this together, we're over an hour. I want to start wrapping up. But like in the aggregate, a lot of these things create a lot of like drag on the actual functioning of bureaucracy in the government. Like not so much like the cultural things. Like I don't think that like the IRS is a
the terrorist organization.
I don't think that like American like bureaucratic agencies are like weighed down by like their extreme horniness or lack thereof of Sidney Sweeney. but I do think there are cultural things in the culture that like make the functioning of our institutions like gradually erode. Honestly, but I think most of it comes from political economy. Like I think that like the neoliberalization of everything has made institutions extremely flimsy and like I said, deracinated. I had this dream the other night. I'm going to tie this to a dream. I had this dream the other night that I was back in the church that I'd grown up in, and these people had taken over the church and taken it in a wildly different direction. And I was like, but my family has gone to this church for 40, 50 years. Like I grew up in this church. Like, do I not have any say or standing into like how the church is now reformed? And, you know, you know, they were like, obviously, like, no, blah, blah, blah.
You're having stress dreams about losing control.
I'm having stress dreams about losing control. That's the thing. Because this is a common theme. This is a common theme of my adult life, like working at various nonprofits, volunteering at various nonprofits or in social movements. There has just been this gradual drift towards mission creep, towards ineffectiveness, towards just lost nearsightedness, like, but also just completely like lost.
Yeah, yo, it's like I don't know how to say it without trying to you know, make it sound like I'm complaining about it or being overly plaintive about it, but it is like this sort of like, man, how can I explain it? Is this sort of like this creep, you know what I mean? And this sort of whittling of opportunity, this feeling that there's this whittling of opportunity or possibility, you know what I mean? And like, I don't know, for me, I'm like, God, how old am I? Like 33, 34 now? I can't even fucking remember. I've started feeling that, like, and I mean, I don't mean to be like, oh, the zeitgeist, but dude, like, I swear to God, it was like after 9/11, right, when I started coming to political age, you know, and all these things that I had imagined myself being, you know, and as an adult, you know, carrying through life, and all these dreams and hopes I had as a kid, and seeing that window, and narrow, not even in my own, narrow, and not even in my own life, right, but just looking at the political climate, looking at the literal climate, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I was just saying that to Terrence the other day. I think the hardest part about getting older, it's not even like, you know, going gray or, you know, whatever, losing a little bit of hair, whatever. It is the idea that the things you wanted for yourself, like the possibilities, shrink and shrink and shrink and shrink and shrink. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
the older they get, the farther those things get away from you, you know?
The Walker Percy quote I always go back to is, blessed is the man that doesn't secretly believe every option is open to him.
I like that.
You see, okay, on the note of what both of you are saying, have y'all seen that like thing that I feel like it goes around once a week at this point, but when people talk about what's happening in Israel and Gaza and the United States government's policy towards this, like, it's a Wikipedia article, and I saw it in an Adam Curtis movie. It's like, the purpose of a system is what it does.
Yeah.
Like, the whole point is, like, there's no point in asking what a system does or why it's doing it. It does what it's programmed to do, basically. Yeah. But it feels like very much like we are all operating in these institutions in a larger political environment of which we are so far disconnected from the purpose of that system and then how it was programmed to do it, what it was to do. That's why we're all kind of, like, stressed out and, like, confused about what we're even supposed to be doing.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, it's like there are days when you just don't know what to kind of do with yourself. You know what I mean? Like what is my... Yeah.
Well, this is... I think this is... there are a lot of different things. There are a lot of different ways to take this. But I think this is partially... Part of the reason for the rise in LLMs, large language... modeling, is that what LLM stands
for? Master of Legal Letters.
The Master of Legal Letters, yes. But like ChatGPT and AI in general, I think part of it is a labor, like a cost saving mechanism for like labor, basically automating certain people out of jobs. But another part of it though is a large structural thing where like people are trying to determine how to like control for the various sort of structural contradictions in the system. The best example of this is in the Washington Post. Let AI remake the whole U.S. government. Oh, and save the country.
And this is in earnest?
This is in earnest.
I think this person should be buried up to their neck in an anthill.
I will be honest with you.
Something should happen.
I would rather be ruled by a whole team of Count Choculas than AI. I'm talking a football team's worth of actual Nosferatu bloodsuckers. Creatures of the night, not.
Oh, I thought you were actually talking about the mascot, Count Chocula. Like, no. That'd be pleasant.
You're like, yeah, it wouldn't be the worst vampire in the government.
Well, so he starts out by talking about Operation Warp Speed and how that was the vaccine program, and how it was kind of sped along by like AI programs. And he talks about like a four-star general who wants to apply the AI to all of the government's ills, from the IRS to contracting to the welfare state. The specific
they did a knockout job on that Operation Warp Speed. I mean, yeah, the vaccine saves lives, but yeah, doesn't really ensure quality of life, as we've all just, you know, been getting COVID multiple times.
Got COVID like three times already.
Yeah, and so the AI that he has specifically in mind. I was reading the article and I was like, okay, I don't really agree, because AI, one of the things about an artificial intelligence is it can't do what a human does, which is have an empathetic judgment. So if you're working at a welfare agency and someone comes to you and lays out their entire life story, an AI will just look at the quantitative data and say, yes, this person is good for welfare benefits. No, they're not. Just based off of a sheer algorithmic calculation.
Or an anvil will drop from the sky and crush them.
And you know what, you could also argue that you could also argue that, like, in institutions like that, where the workers there are encouraged to be like machines, right?
Yeah.
And be unfeeling, you could argue that, like, yeah, then AI would be the perfect replacement for those people, right?
Yeah. So, like, that's why I would oppose it on those grounds. But as he was laying out the argument, I was like, I guess I can kind of see this. Like, if you're talking about certain inefficiencies and redundancies in how bureaucracy is done, for example, I guess tax revenue and tax collection.
Which, anything to do with numbers? I'm not good with math. Yeah. Give that shit to the computer.
Apparently, AI is not even, from what I understand, having read about it, AI is not as good at math as you would expect.
So AI still counting numbers under the on their fingers under the table. Like, AI still doing that shit.
Well, it would appear that at certain levels of mathematical abstraction is a human capacity. It requires various degrees and levels of imagination. An AI doesn't have that. So while an AI can crunch hard numbers, it probably can't do, like, you know, vast abstract levels of math. I'm not an expert in this. This is just what I've read. What an AI is good at, apparently, right now, is like predictive text generation. That's why ChatGPT is becoming so popular, and why all of our jobs are at fucking risk.
And if you were anybody who was a writer, bro?
Yes, so exactly.
You were bored. I was talking to a friend of the show, Josh Olson, the other day. I was like, man, I feel like, I always say I was born at the wrong time, but I'm black, so there was no time that would be probably the best time to be allowed.
Maybe under the rule of Mansa Musa, but.
or Mansa Musa, or the 24th century where I have my own starship. But, like, it's like, if you're a writer right now, this shit sucks.
It's the worst fucking time to be a writer.
It's the fucking worst time to be a writer.
Straight up. It really is. But anyways, right? Like, this is you know, that's what AI is. That's what LLMs do. As I was reading the article, though, the AI in particular that they have in mind for this is created by a company called Palantir.
There it is. There it is.
Favorite dystopian tech firm.
Yeah. I'm just going to read here. What Palantir does has long been draped in mystery. It's a software company that works with AI and is named for the indestructible crystal balls in Lord of the Rings, so they're not exactly discouraging it, but the foundation of its products is almost comically dull. Imagine all of an organization's data sources as a series
of... Bobby Schmurder, who got locked because of fucking Palantir.
Is that why?
Yeah.
What? Yeah. What? You remember you telling me that, Tom?
Yeah, it was surveillance software that got him indicted and everything.
Palantir, they say, imagine all of an organization's data sources as a series of garden hoses in your backyard. Let's say the organization is a hospital. There are hoses for personnel, equipment, drugs, insurance, medical supplies, scheduling, bed availability, and probably dozens of other things. Many of the hoses connect up to vendors, and many connect to the patients. No one can remember what some of them are supposed to connect to. All were brought at different times from different manufacturers and are different sizes and lengths. And it's a hospital, so hose maintenance has never been anyone's top priority. Now look out the window. There's a pile of knotted rubber so dense you can't see grass. Palantir untangles hoses. We've always been the mole people of Silicon Valley, says Palantir's chief architect.
Can I just say, we were just talking about being writers. That was a tortured-ass metaphor, dog. I'll let it fucking pass, whatever, y'all.
I was going to say the same thing. There was a much better ways to get there.
We've always been the mole people of Silicon Valley, says Palantir's chief architect. It's like we go into the plumbing of all this stuff and come out and say, let's help you build a beautiful ontology.
So this nigga said, we Mario? Fuck out of here, dog.
Oh, God, you're talking about cursed sentences.
Fuck out of here.
A beautiful ontology. In software and AI, that means it's come... In software and AI, ontology has come to mean the untangling of messes and the creation of a functional information ecosystem. Basically, what I'm outlining here is things have become so complex. They've become so weighted down under the heaviness of their complexity that we as humans apparently can't even solve them anymore. So we have to turn it over to machines that then aggregate certain information and then are able to like concatenate. What's the word? They're able to, divide out certain
optimize it, I guess, whatever. But like also collate. Too, like this is like hiring. Like every time you like lose a pair, like a sock out of a pair, or you lose the Roku remote, this is like hiring somebody to find it for you. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
This is just like this weird thing that has been created out of modern conveniences. And you know what I'm saying? And the convolution out of modern conveniences requiring new solutions for them, you know?
Yes. It is this, just like in the political realm, it's this surrender to cynicism. It's the surrender to realism, the acceptance and acknowledgement that we can never fix any of the problems that we've brought upon ourselves under capitalism, that they're all too complex and too heavy. That like they'll all either collapse and take us with them into the black hole, or we can just deploy AI at them and they can sort it all out for us.
Or if you're the right wing, then you believe that God will fill in the role of the computer, right?
Yes, right.
That's so
scary. Which would be nice. I would like that if that would.
Yeah, I mean, if it was the like actual God, you know, like
yeah,
not Old Testament God. Is Old Testament God the vengeful one?
He's the bad one, yeah.
Yeah, not me.
He lightens up by the time we get to the new covenant, okay?
But a lot of shit goes down before that, so I don't know.
So this article is extremely long. I'm just going to read the final passage here. Because he goes on to talk about Palantir and their history. And this is an op-ed. It's in the opinion section, but it's like 5,000 words. I don't know what the fuck. It's like an ad for Palantir, basically. But he says, it did not take someone with JFK's charisma to inspire Americans to go to the moon. The moon is big and pretty. Humanity has been dreaming about it for eons. The challenge
also,
of
he using... never got to see that because he got his top blown off. But you know,
yeah.
And also, humans figured out how to do that without the assistance of AI. But
with government
presumably,
right.
We did understand
orbits and how to mathematically compute the exact distance and speed you would need to position something to orbit around something, which again, you don't need AI to do that.
But now we need to pay $26 for somebody to bring us a Diet Coke, you know.
you know who used to do those calculations? They would call computers. They were black women that used to do those calculations. Mostly black women that did those calculations.
But this is part of the argument of this article. The argument is that software has similarly become too complex and heavy with the contradictions of the past that we need to wipe all software clean and replace it with AI. This is the promise of Palantir. That you uninstall, we do a collective uninstalling of all the software of the past and then reinstall it with AI.
So it's like the rapture. It's like the AI rapture.
It's the AI rapture.
God, these freaks.
We've created God, and we want God to fix it for us, except God is not that great as we, not as great as we think it is.
God is sitting at the Willy Wonka pop-up in the corner.
What was that Profiles in Courage we did about the God machine that time?
Yeah, the God machine in the
1800s. Reverend Spear. And
Yeah.
We're trying to do like the immaterial version of that.
No, we're version. Every day is a new adventure in the Tower of Babel. It's like, what fucking, what can we come up with today to like scrape the lower rungs of heaven that God is just fucking, just like, I created distance from between myself and you for a reason, you fucking weirdo.
Yeah. And all the while, how can we also just make everybody feel less human?
Mm-hmm.
I was thinking about that, the dude Toma Bongletear, one half of Daft Punk, when they were talking about a Daft Punk reunion. He came out with this classical record because he's like a classically trained composer. And his comment on was, the last fucking thing I want to be right now is a robot.
Yeah.
You know, I saw this clip that was going around from one of those accounts that posts like, you know, videos or science facts and shit. And it was Arthur C. Clarke, a famous British science fiction writer. Maybe probably in the 50s, maybe, I think, talking about the future, right? And, of course, the post is like, Arthur C. Clarke had some amazing predictions about the future. And, of course, he talks about telecommunications, right? Not like cities on the moon and shit, but, you know, what actually happened. But what he said that I took a, I want to use the word umbrage. It's not umbrage. I didn't take personal offense, but I was like, that's bullshit. Is that, you know, he said it'll make the world smaller, you know, and it'll kind of create a global community, you know? And I'm not trying to be a Luddite here, man, but I would argue that, like, the advent of, you know, telecommunications, especially the internet, Terrence, you've brought this point up, has made us probably the stupidest that we've ever been. And I'm talking about in human history. I'm talking about, that's probably a big claim. You know what I mean? We've been stupider, but I mean, I'm just talking about,
during the forums era, we were definitely stupider.
But just having access to more information than at any point in human history, and people just still say the most insane shit ever when you have a fucking computer in your pocket, you know what I mean? That, like, 60 years ago was the size of a fucking room and weighed a ton, you know?
I wonder if that is a refutation of that tide in society, like just the saying the most absolute insane shit, the most incongruous shit that you can come up with, you know what
despite
I mean
the fact, and it just despite not the fact that you can look it up
despite the fact to the contrary, you know,
dude. And because and that's the point I was getting at, right? He talks about like the world getting smaller, but I would say that, like, you know, not only has it, like, you know, obviously fractured, right, and alienated people, but it's just this deluge of information, you know. Like, just this constant overwhelming, like, I mean, I think this is, I've mentioned it before, my worry with AI is that, like, AI will junk up search engines so much so that you can't even find, you know, an original painting.
It's
right?
already or, doing that, yeah.
It's already doing that, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I mean, what is there to suggest that that trend is going to abate and this is going to just sort itself out? Like, exactly. It's already bad.
Exactly.
I do think that, like, because I'm similarly not a Luddite. I do think, though, that in a different arrangement, a societal arrangement, that, like, you can use this technology for all kinds of, like, creative pursuits and call them industrial architectural pursuits and that kind of stuff, right? Like, I think about, like, in the Mars trilogy, like, part of the use of AI is used there to basically, what's the word I'm looking for? Like, maintenance this elevator from the atmosphere of Mars down to the surface of Mars. Because if Mars is specifically rotational capacity, you need AI to be able to compute in real time how an orbital elevator would work.
So that it doesn't split like a thread or something like that.
Exactly. Like that's really more the use of AI that, like, you would maybe get out of rather than, like, high school students, like, cheating on their essays or what this writer is trying to advocate for, like, getting bigger tax revenues.
So AI, instead of AI, would basically be used to keep people alive and make their lives better and easier?
Yeah.
Instead of whatever the fuck we're doing now?
Whatever this is. Yeah.
Well, but let me just finish reading this article and then we can close out. I know we've gone really long, but, like, this does, like I said, this does tie in with what we've been outlining. The challenge of using AI for better government is very different. The excitement about a new thing is tempered by fear and confusion. To get maximum reward from AI, the country must first go through an unprecedented vegetable eating exercise to clean up its bureaucracy. Jesus.
Motherfucker said we need fiber.
We must all get our own blood boys like our founder.
The relationship between citizens and government is fractured. It's crucial to the Republic's survival that we stop defending the status quo. New technology can help us repair the damage and open the door to a level of service and efficiency that will make Scandinavians seize with envy. Almost all this... AI.
Such a weird line. We tacitly acknowledge they have it much better figured out than... But not for long.
He talks about how, like, Democrats need to acknowledge that not every government job should be one for life, that we have to fire a lot of bureaucrats, blah, blah, blah. All of this is preamble to the work, methodical demolition and joyful construction. blah, blah, blah. One of the secrets of great software is that it's not built all at once. Projects get broken down into manageable units. Teams get feedback, make adjustments in real time. It's a form of common sense that the industry calls agile development. The United States could do its first agile AI sprint in its most broken place, where the breach of trust and services is the most shameful. You likely know the statistic about Veterans Affairs, but there's one worth repeating. 6,392 veterans died by suicide in 2021. The most recent year numbers are available. Okay, this is really weird. A ProPublica survey of Inspector General reports found VA employees regularly botched screenings meant to assess veterans' risk of suicide or violence. Sometimes they didn't perform the screenings at all. What if we treat VA like the crisis it is? It's not as simple as untangling hoses between veterans and the department. A lot of care is managed manually. But when we create digital infrastructure, appointment scheduling can run on AI. A cascade of benefits would follow, such as reduced wait times, analytics that predicts demands for service. Next, make a first alert chatbot for veterans that only with their consent can be used to look for signs of crisis or suicidal thoughts.
Oh, if you feel like you want to kill yourself, talk to the computer.
Yeah.
That's the thing. It's like, give it enough time and these things will not be asking for your consent. They just will be deploying wellness checks anytime that you even...
They deploy a drone and do it for you, bro. Like, oh, you want out? We got you.
But because this is the thing, in a capitalist society, there are surplus populations. And do you think that an AI is going to come up with any solution for a surplus population other than just swift extermination?
Yeah, just it encourage you to kill yourself or send the other robot to kill you.
This is the last thread, like... Truly, like, mass incarceration was like the last attempt at any, the government calls it altruistic. Obviously, it's completely fascistic. But like, surplus population, as, you know, Ruth Wilson Gilmore points out, like, you had surplus population, surplus land, surplus government capacity to deal with this. And what resulted was mass incarceration. If you turn that over to an AI, they won't even come up with that. Their solution will be just completely just, you know, wipe them out.
Liquidation.
And, you know, I mean, I probably brought this up before, man. I brought this up several times on the show. But, like, you know, it's like, you, I think about, like, Kodak, you know, and coming out with film, you know what I mean? And they came out with color film that couldn't reproduce the skin color of black people, you know, because inherent built into that technology were biases, you know.
Yeah.
Of a certain social system, you know. So it's like,
yeah,
like, you really want the computers, the AI, when they deploy that shit in police departments across the country and through and healthcare and in education, the education system, whatever fucking education system we have, you really want it to be doing that shit? You know what I mean? So yeah. It could, like, so more kids that could have maybe had an opportunity, more people that could have gotten an opportunity. You know what I mean? Like, all of these liberal ideas that they believe in, you know, equality of opportunity. It's like the AI will deny that outright because this system is not built on opportunity, you know?
Yeah.
It's like,
well, I mean, it's built on opportunity for who, you know?
It's, we've talked about it before, but like in the Fordist era, the way that discrimination was meted out was through these, you know, prejudicial markers like skin color and sexuality and all this other stuff. and how the neoliberal reform with that was just attach every person's name to a number and call it a credit score and all this other stuff. I think AI would combine the two. At least, like, we talked about the AI. Remember the dating app that was for like your credit score?
Yeah.
It's just like it's going to determine your race, your credit score, and then like your phone will just have like a needle like in Dune that'll just come out and fucking pierce your neck with a like a lethal thing. You'll just die. It's like, all right.
All right, all right. You have been determined to be surplus.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that that's the thing. It's like, I don't on the face of it disagree that like AI is a promising, hopeful tool that could be used to better human life. In a capitalist society, no, that is not true at all, because in a capitalist society, there is surplus population. That is a hallmark of capitalist society. When you combine that with AI, there's only one solution that it's going to come to.
I'll put it this way to put a fine point on it, because I love Star Trek. Like, you know why the replicator exists in Star Trek? If anybody knows the replicator, it could turn anything into matter, right? You know, I don't know how it works. Actually, it works because it's feces technically. But anyway, right? It could turn all this waste into matter, right, on the ship. And the only reason why it works is because they've achieved the post-scarcity society. If that technology existed under a capitalist society, you know, Jeff Bezos and all these fucking ghouls, these undead ghouls would be hoarding it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's like...
Isn't Israel already doing this? Remember, we covered
making
this
a replicator?
On a, yeah, no, well, we covered this on an, you know.
I was about to, yo, nah, son, tell me, Israel's not going to make a space federation.
No, but the Zionist federation. Like, they're already using AI to basically make more efficient the killing machine. Like, we covered this on an episode. Yeah. They were using that program, The Gospel, to basically target Palestinians. And so it's like,
oh,
this,
my God.
That is a harbinger of what you're talking about. When you're talking about, like, turning over these things to AI, that's what it would look like in this society.
Oh, my God.
There's no alternative.
A techno New Testament.
All right, gang. I think that's probably a good place to end it today. I hope that you enjoyed the show. If you would like to go support us on Patreon, you know where to find us. Today is the State of the Union. We're recording this, you know, many hours before the State of the Union. But if you
way,
would like
way
to...
Way before Joe Biden's bedtime. Well, maybe not that much before. It's an hour before Joe Biden's bedtime is ever recorded.
I'm interested to see how he does, you know?
Well, I think we're going to cover that on the Patreon. I imagine we'll have plenty of things to say about the State of the Union. So if you would like to hear what we have to say about it and our debriefing, I guess one thing we could do would be like a Twitch stream, but like I'm not that enterprising, at least not yet. Like I'm in Lexington now. I'm trying to like turn this into an operation. Maybe that means video streaming eventually, but like for now, I still gotta get my shit again.
We gotta get shit together. Maybe y'all can see our beautiful faces soon.
Yeah, but you could go to the Patreon though, and like I said, we'll probably be talking about that, debriefing about that on Monday or on Sunday, unless Tom and I find tickets to the Drake show, in which case we'll be doing that on Monday.
If anybody's got any leads on that for less than $1 million, let me know. hit my line.
Yeah,
yo, when you see Drake, tell him his sneakers are fucking ugly. Sneakers he did with Nike are fucking grotesque.
It's just a normal like Air Force One with certified lover boy wrote on the side.
Like what the fuck is that?
The sneakers are shitty, brother, but the dick looks great. Your penis is looking great, man.
Penis is looking super, brother.
Hog's looking fantastic, which is more than I can say for those fucking shoes you got on.
Good looking penis. I want to like get my autograph.
Penis,
a 36-year-old skinny white guy. Good looking penis, Drake.
Now you gotta call him Aubrey. Good looking penis, Aubrey.
Oh my god.
His guards just shoot me in the head. Just like that guy needed.
Automatically.
You have been deemed surplus.
This nigga pick me up and throw me up in the head like a napkin.
Good looking penis, Aubrey. Love how the penis is looking these days, Aubrey. You're doing great things with the penis.
I'll tell you, Aubrey. It's the best fucking penis I've ever seen, Aubrey.
Oh my god. God. Everyone around me in like a 10-mile radius dies of embarrassment. It's just like they're calling it the biggest mass casualty event from vicarious embarrassment. 30,000 people dead.
And if you one guy, like, I just ran away. As soon as he started talking, made that fucking voice, I was out the door, man. Bodies just started dropping all around.
I clocked what it was, and I reacted in time and appropriately.
You ever see the end of Watchmen? Just scores of dead bodies.
Oh my god. Just, yeah, one guy makes it out alive. Just a psychopath who's not capable of vicarious embarrassment.
He has no emotions at all. And the only reason he's alive. So how do you feel about being around that much death and destruction?
I mean, he was making a good point. The penis do be looking good, though.
Heard that, Aubrey?
He's just killing. Dude, you could just kill entire scores of people by saying that on the nightly news. The penis is looking great, Aubrey.
The penis. No, I'm not going to do the Trump voice.
All right, gang. Sorry, we've gone way too long. Thanks for tuning in. Please go to the Patreon and support us. We would love to see you over there. Until next time, thanks for listening. Peace out.
Later, y'all.